counsel, and we will move on to case number 8, Royal against Cameron Norris. Ms. Trier.
My name is Carolyn Trier, and I am the attorney for the 510 officers. Based on the district court's facts, this court has jurisdiction because based on the district court's facts, the question is, did the officers violate clearly established law? And here, the appellants accept, for purposes of the qualified immunity inquiry, the facts and reasonable inferences favorable to the estate of Lance Royal, and contend that those facts fail to show a violation of clearly established law.
So for purposes of the appeal, are you agreeing that the officers were on notice of a serious medical need? For purposes of the appeal?
For purposes of the appeal, in order for this court to have jurisdiction, okay. I have to agree with that.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So based on that finding by the district court, there was no clearly established law that would have put these officers on notice that they had to take any additional precautionary actions that they took, given the facts of this case.
So you do not see this record as one in which they simply took no action in light of their...
They took a lot of action. They repeatedly asked Lance Royal, had you swallowed any cocaine? And he said no repeatedly. They asked him how he felt at the scene, during the transport to the jail, in the interview room. Do you feel okay? How are you feeling? And he repeatedly said he was fine. He said, I didn't swallow any cocaine. He didn't request medical treatment. The paramedics checked him out at the scene and said that he did not need to go to the hospital.
Can I interrupt and say, of what importance is the intervention of the paramedics? I think I picked up a little bit from the other brief that maybe the paramedics weren't as fully informed, or maybe they were told, oh, this is no big deal, but maybe you should look at him, or that there was some problem with the paramedic opinion.
Well, I think what Judge Cherry pulled out of the videos was that when Sergeant Bowers, they initially called the paramedics because the original suspect for this narcotics investigation indicated that she was feeling sick, so they called for an ambulance. And then Sergeant Bowers said to the paramedic, why don't you go ahead and talk to Lance Royal, because he was chewing some rock, and see if he needs to go to the hospital. And then he made a comment, I don't think he does, but could you check him out? And Judge Cherry kind of harped on that phrase, I don't think he does. But the paramedics are trained medical professionals, and regardless of what the officer says, if he made that comment or not, they still have a duty to apply their training and decide whether this person needs to go to the hospital or not.
And they're not defendants here.
No, they are not.
Yeah.
Isn't it uncontested, too, that they told the paramedics that he had been chewing cocaine?
They did tell them.
And that's captured on the video evidence?
Yes. They said that
there was some reference to two rocks and what they told him.
Well, there's Lance Royal, as he's sitting in the back of the squad car, tells the paramedics, I've listened to it over and over, and he says something about two rocks.
Right.
And so Detective Francis, who was the one who removed what Lance Royal had spit out of his mouth onto the pavement, he believed that was the amount of the two rocks, you know, based on his training and experience as a narcotics detective.
What about all the powder that was in the car? Wasn't that suggestive that maybe there had been a whole lot of cocaine in play?
Right. And
actually, I want to just follow up on that for a minute. I kept reading that account of this car that was just a blizzard of cocaine and thinking, wasn't anybody thinking that he had inhaled some of it? I mean, you can certainly inhale cocaine, added to the dose, so to speak.
Right. These officers conduct hundreds of narcotic investigations a year, and those types of facts are very typical, that there's, you know, when they pull over a car or they go into a drug house or a crack house, there's drugs. It's a drug investigation, and it's not uncommon that there might be cocaine residue or cocaine powder in the car. I mean, that's not unusual.
And so is this, of course not. If you're looking for drugs,
right.
You know, and you will sometimes or often find them, but we talking about residue here? I mean, at least the way that the description read was that it was a little more than residue, that it was kind of, you know, visible
ambient
and glowing.
Correct. Yeah. And that, what you're referring to, is on the passenger side of the car, which is where Portia Gentry was seated. Lance Royal was the driver of the car, and there was not much residue around where he was or the powder that you're speaking of. And when the ambulance personnel arrived on the scene, the officers do tell the paramedics that, you know, there's a lot of cocaine everywhere. So the paramedics were informed of that, and the officers should be entitled to rely on the paramedics' professional opinion, you know, that he didn't need to be transported to the hospital, that he didn't have an emergency medical need.
I have a question about why you're conceding notice for purposes of this appeal, because under Scott versus Harris, you know, if the video evidence blatantly contradicts it and no reasonable juror could infer from the video evidence that they didn't, that they had notice.
Right.
I mean, that then that's so within our jurisdiction. I mean, Scott versus Harris was on summary judgment from a qualified immunity case.
Well, I'm conceding it so that you'll accept jurisdiction of the case, because I was just up here a month ago and I didn't concede something, so the court said there wasn't jurisdiction. And I'm focusing on the second prong of qualified immunity, in that even if you take everything that the district court finds as true, the officer still didn't violate clearly established law.
Okay. Well, I understand that. I'm asking you to explain a little bit more why you think it would deprive us of jurisdiction to
just based on my past
Scott
experience
versus Harris.
That,
so you're just gun shy based on your past experience.
Yes. Right.
Well, and despite the video, you have to be saying there was some issue about notice. I mean, a disputed issue of fact about notice.
Yeah. I mean, I don't believe that the officer had notice of a serious medical need whatsoever. I mean, they kept asking Lance Royal, are you okay? Did you swallow any cocaine? He didn't complain of being sick. He shows no physical signs. It's interesting because this case is on video from the very beginning until the very end, and he doesn't show any physical signs of being sick until he's in that interview room right before he...
And the only strange thing about that is it's Francis, right, who hears the thump, and he thinks he's just decided to lay down, take a nap on the floor. I mean, that seemed a little crazy to me.
Well, actually, having done these types of cases for a very long time, it's really not that unusual. They put these suspects in interview rooms, and they get bored, and they lay down on the floor. They lay their head down on the desk because they're in there for, you know, quite some time, and the adrenaline of being arrested kind of is wearing off, and they get tired. So it actually does happen. It might seem odd, but did I answer?
Sure.
Okay. So there are cases that I have cited that the officers are entitled to rely on the paramedics, and I think that's crucial in this case, is that the paramedics, it talked to him and decided that he didn't need to be transported. In a state of Perry versus Winsell, the Seventh Circuit held that the officers are not medical professionals and officers are entitled to rely on the nurse's professional judgment without subjecting themselves to Section 1983 liability. And in Arnett versus Webster, the Seventh Circuit stated non-medical defendants can rely on the expertise of medical professionals. So I think the fact that the paramedics checked him out at the scene, whatever they decided to do, examine him, talk to him, whatever they decided to do, that's their professional opinion, and the officers shouldn't have to second guess the medical opinions of the paramedics.
And the question of whether or not there was a question of fact as to a serious medical need really was the bulk of the district court's opinion. The question of whether or not there was clearly established law was addressed very briefly. Is that how it was argued below? It just seemed surprising to me. I know I looked at your briefs. It looks like you did raise the question of clearly established law, but
yes,
this was a lengthy, thorough opinion, but it really addressed the first prong.
And I agree. And Judge Cherry relied on this Lovert versus Hubert case, or not, that he relied on the estate of Clark versus Walker case. And recently in 2018, he relied on the Clark versus Walker case to hold that the officers violated clearly established law. And recently, the Seventh Circuit stated in 2018 in Lovert versus Hubert that case is about a suicide risk, and it's not analogous to a case where an intoxicated person was given an upper bunk in a cell, and therefore the court held that you can't rely on a suicide case to instruct the officers what's reasonable in a case where a person's intoxicated. And that's the case that Judge Cherry relied on in this case, and I think that he was wrong to rely on that. Yeah, he didn't address the clearly established law issue.
All right, I think we'll have to leave it at that. And
okay.
Thank you. Time is up. Mr. Myers.
Judge, thank you, Chris Myers, for the appellee. It is the appellee's position that this case should be dismissed for want of jurisdiction. It's been made mention already that Judge Cherry issued, and I think it was a 56-page opinion, analyzing all of the facts.
But what is the clearly established law that was violated here, which is the second prong of the qualified immunity analysis?
And, Your Honor, I did not, must confess, I did not write this brief. David Frank did. He's left me. That's why you have me the second string. But I know that it is clearly established law that officers cannot ignore a substantial risk of injury to a suspect.
So the evidence here, which is uncontested below, especially given the video, is that they asked him multiple times, are you okay? They turned him over and opened his mouth to try to get him to spit out the cocaine that was in his mouth. They repeatedly asked him when he was back in the squad car, are you okay? Do you feel okay? They told him, spit it out, because we won't hold it against you in your charges. We're worried about your health. It's all captured on the video. I'm paraphrasing. But
and could I add that, I mean, I'm quite taken with the fact that the paramedics look at him. It's hard for me to imagine assigning any culpability to the police officers up to the moment when the paramedics say he's all right. Are they supposed to override what the paramedics said?
In this instance, yes.
Why?
What clearly established law requires that?
Well, let me talk about the remainder of the facts, if I could, because I think that's germane to your question. Yes, some of the facts are just as you indicated, but there's so much more. There's photographs of him basically covered in white powder. They come on the scene and the officers, and I believe it's Officer Norris, when he first struggles with my client, or the decedent, he spits out some cocaine. Other officers see him chewing on a rock. There's no doubt that he ingested some cocaine. Portia Gentry tells the officers, and she's the one that was driven to the hospital. This is his passenger. Portia Gentry tells the officers he needs to go to the hospital too.
But here we have a big Scott versus Harris problem, don't we? Because she cannot be heard saying that on any of these many recordings that were made. It's just not there.
Well, there's no evidence that her recording or that her conversations with the officers were recorded.
Okay. Yes, there is. She was captured on, because she was there, the body cameras captured her, the squad car cameras captured her.
Well,
so
then
right.
We have a dispute of the evidence, I suppose.
But as Scott versus Harris says, if it's blatantly contradicted by the record, and I think that's kind of your best fact, because they saw him with the rock in his mouth, they saw him spit out the cocaine, and so they did have the paramedics examine him. They did say, we don't want you to have a heart attack. You know.
But I don't think there's any uncontroverted evidence that she did not say these things to the police. But
they dispute that.
Well, they do dispute that.
And it's not captured on the video. So the video or the audios of the incident that captured many of her statements.
Many of her statements, but not necessarily all. I think that comes down to a disputed fact.
So even if that is, let's assume she said he needs medical care. Then the paramedics are there. And they convey this information to the paramedics. And they say, he's fine. What else should they have done, and what clearly established law would have required them to do something beyond what the paramedics said?
Your Honor, I'm not aware that the paramedics can necessarily overrule the police officers. In fact, I think that there's evidence in this record.
Well, on issues of health needs, there's a lot of law to say the police officers are entitled to rely on medical. It doesn't mean the police officers couldn't have overridden them, but did they violate a clearly established duty when they choose to rely on what the paramedics' opinion is?
Well, and I think that they did, especially in this situation where it's the officers relating information to the paramedics.
But the paramedics are looking at him.
They're an independent examination.
And they're asking him questions, and he is responding directly to the paramedics. I'm fine. He tells them something about the two.
I appreciate that, but there's other evidence to look at. First of all, you know, this is a suspect who's basically eaten some evidence. I don't think it's unusual that a suspect would try and get rid of some of the evidence. I think it's very unhealthy, obviously, the method that he chose.
We know that, yes.
To do it here. But there's so much more evidence to look at in terms of how much that this particular suspect could have ingested.
So, let's assume there's an issue of fact on whether or not they had reasonable notice of a serious medical need. What is the clearly established law? That's the second prong of qualified immunity that has to be there. What case, what clearly established law is out there that says if paramedics look at an individual and they say he's fine or don't say he has to be transported to the hospitals, that police officers should overrule that determination and take him to the hospital?
Your Honor, I can only rely upon the cases that Mr. Frank cited in the brief. But I think, you know, generally speaking, officers, when they're faced with a substantial risk of injury to a suspect, even in cases where the suspect has, you know, on his own volition, ingested some materials, if it's so obvious that he could be in trouble, I think they have a duty to take
him. If it was so obvious, the paramedics would have said that, no?
Well, they didn't necessarily say it in the case of Ms. Gentry. They took Ms. Gentry to the hospital. I mean, you know, the situation...
They exercised their medical judgment, and their medical judgment was she needed to go and he didn't.
Well, Your Honor, this is a situation, I think, where events are happening very fast pace. All right.
But again, we're at qualified immunity, and the question is, are they entitled to it? Was there some clearly established law that required them to do more here? I certainly haven't found any case that says if paramedics or other medical personnel say that somebody doesn't need to go to the hospital, that officers working off of the same general facts should override that and must take somebody to the hospital.
Your Honor, I can't remember which officer it was, but it was an officer that mentioned to the paramedic, I don't think he needs to go.
And they still checked him out, and another officer told them he ingested cocaine, and the paramedic still went, despite that statement, and interacted with him and checked him out and said he didn't need to go. So if they had walked away after the officer said that, maybe you'd have a different case. But they didn't walk away. They went and they physically checked him out.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, nobody, not even the paramedics, knew how much he ingested. And I think out of an abundance of caution, they needed to take him to the hospital just like they
did. So you're asking for a per se rule that it is always unconstitutional if the police know that someone has ingested some undefined amount of cocaine, but they seem fine, exhibiting no symptoms, but that always requires a trip to the hospital, even after examination by paramedics. Otherwise, there's a constitutional violation.
I'm not willing to say always, but I am willing to say that on these facts, which Judge Cherry found to be disputed, that he needed to go to the hospital. I mean, he's got a white face.
But the paramedics could see that too. Why isn't the real case here against them? They obviously made a mistake. I mean, we all have, unfortunately, the benefit of hindsight. But at most, a mistake. I don't see anything that made me think they were deliberately indifferent or anything of the sort. But it's so hard to see why this is malfunction by the police officers on the scene who have presented him to the paramedics.
I understand that, but the paramedics didn't, they weren't on the scene at first. They didn't see him chewing on the rock of cocaine. They didn't see...
But they were told that, including by Mr. Royal himself.
Well, they weren't, I don't know that they were told everything. I don't know that there's a lot of evidence in the
record
about that.
He told them, and it's captured on the video and audio, something about the two, after the officers had said he had been chewing on cocaine, and they went and they interacted with him, and he said something about two pieces or two that sounded like he's referring back to that cocaine.
Well, I think that there are disputed facts, and I think that, you know, because it is a qualified immunity case, that this court lacks jurisdiction to hear the appeal.
Okay. All right, thank you very much, Mr. Myers. Ms. Trier, I think your time expired, but I'll give you a minute if you need it.
So it's our position that there's no clearly established law that the Fourth Amendment would require, would have required the officers to take any further precautionary actions than they took with respect to Mr. Royal. But not only is there no clearly established law, but in my briefs I cited cases, one that's very factually similar to this case, and it's a little bit more compelling because in that case the officers knew that the suspect had swallowed cocaine for sure. And that was in Chess versus City of Freeport. It's a Northern District of Illinois case, but it's very factually similar to this case. They saw the driver twice put something in his mouth and drink from a bottle. And when the driver stopped the van, they handcuffed him. They asked him if he had swallowed anything, and he said he had swallowed a pencil. Each officer testified in their deposition that the suspect may have swallowed cocaine prior to or at the time of his arrest. And the court stated in that case, it was not unreasonable for the officers to conclude prior to observing any symptoms that he had not swallowed a significant amount of drugs, and the court held that the officers in that case acted reasonably under the Fourth Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.